advise you to get off the streets as quickly as possible. It'll soon be a war up there.
And we are, as a people, opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths.
I know for a fact.
And to secret proceedings.
Weapons of mass destruction.
I have a dream.
I take the threat very seriously.
A new world order.
Your government thanks you for your participation.
You are now listening to the world famous Sofa King podcast.
Please read from sheets. I am Sofa King.
Sofa King.
Now repeat all very fast, please.
I am Sofa King.
Faster.
I am Sofa King.
No, not so fast. Loses meaning.
I am Sofa King.
You say funny things.
You got banana nut mouth over there. You can't talk yet.
Just interrupting me.
You were smacking. I was trying to save you. You were late on the music because you were smacking on banana nut bread.
Now, I had a good intro. I was just going to bring it in, and I was like letting it, you know, you're late to the party, fashionably late. That's what was going to happen.
Just letting it marinate.
Well, that's what you get for making me drink whiskey twice.
Old bearded alcoholic over there just ruined the intro. That's okay. I had banana bread in my pocket and I was eating it. So we got a lot of things going on today. Welcome to the Sofa King podcast. If you haven't heard us, we are the Sofa King podcast. And we got a question. Why do we have an intro music? What does the intro have to do with our show?
I settled that for him. I talked to him.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, he actually did not get the inside joke. He hadn't.
Oh, the Sofa King part.
Yeah, he didn't get it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I sent him a private message to be nice, and then he watched a YouTube video and laughed and conceded.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So if you don't know why we have an intro, we have an intro because we want an intro, and it's our podcast, and we do whatever we want.
That's right.
So
that wasn't really his question. He just didn't get the Sofa King joke.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
and today, I have to give a shout out to you guys for editing the, the conspiracy theory people talking intro that we debuted last week. 'Cause it's pretty dope.
Okay. Thank you. Yep. I'll take that.
Brad was a painter. I just commissioned it.
That
was
dope. Yes. Yeah. I am the Galileo.
That's
Michelangelo.
I'm going tequila right now.
The Leonardo da Vinci.
Leonardo da Vinci.
With tequila in hand, you're already talking like that.
It was the banana nut bread. It was stuck to the roof of my mouth a little bit. So I bought the guy as a present. We are primarily a whiskey podcast, apparently. But I like the Three Generations tequila. It is very good and smooth. Brent is going to try some. So we'll toast to that. We're going to try that today. Dave is watching us. Tasty.
That ain't whiskey, that's for sure.
No, it's tequila.
I haven't had tequila in a long time.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, you just had some. What's and your it's rating? Delicious.
I mean, I'm not really a connoisseur of tequila, but I mean, it's good.
It's smooth.
It's smooth.
Yeah. Yeah.
I forgot about the tequila taste, though. I was ready for I just had whiskey. That's like, it's a whole nother deal.
Yeah, Brent's going to be pissed pretty soon.
Yeah. He just had, what I like to do in the beginning of the show, if you don't know, Brent has this OCD thing where he has to drink a finger of tequila. Or whiskey before or during our intro music.
Yeah, at the moment that he says, please read from sheets, he swigs the like that.
He's drinking whiskey. And so what moment. I like to do is restart it, you know, a few times before we start the show. So he has to drink. It's actually really entertaining because he gets mad.
I should have never led on to the thing so he can't exploit me.
I think we would have figured it out by now.
And so us drinking, we're actually celebrating what we're talking about today, which is prohibition.
Prohibition, yes.
And not cannabis prohibition.
But alcohol prohibition.
Alcohol prohibition.
And we've actually had a lot of people on social medias and a lot of people in person, I guess, with mouth medias.
Mouth medium.
That's right. Mouth medium, have mentioned that they want us to talk about weed. They want us to talk about legalization of marijuana. I've had a couple of people tell me they want me to talk about like El Chapo and, the Medellin cartel and all these different things. And I mean, those are all things that are on our big board of topics that we want to talk about, but I kind of think it's worth, doing prohibition of alcohol first, because it really kind of, it sets the game. I mean, we talk about, you know, what's going to happen if we make pot legal, and people claim that this is unprecedented. Well, it used to be legal at some point, and they, you know, they made it illegal. Yeah. And alcohol was legal forever. And then they, for 13 years, they had the grand social experiment of having no alcohol. And the outcomes are pretty spectacular. And we wanted to kind of talk about this just as sort of a preamble to other talks about legalization of other drugs and so forth.
I think we should give a shout out to some listeners, because we're going to be indulging into some Brazilian snacks.
Yes.
We received a package, an actual box that was wrapped with a label on it, a package, that type of package.
Yes.
Who is it from?
Rex Smith.
From Brazil.
Yes. From Brazil.
And it has Brazilian goodies. Hopefully Brazilian we're not treats. Eating cat poop.
I think we are. Toxoplasmosis laced chocolate wafers.
So he's
they're Brazilian Oreos. In Brazil, Oreos are square.
Yes. He sent us Monsanto gifts, which Dave can't have. So
because they're made by Nestle.
Yes. Yeah, they're made by Nestle. Well, that's not why I in general would advise not eating Nestle, but for the sake of the gift, I would have, but they're not vegan, so I'm not gonna eat them.
Yep. He don't like you. No. He just sent me and Brent gifts.
All right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to eat this right now.
You going to eat a cookie?
I got
it's a Nestle. What is it called?
Soak up
called
some of this.
What are they called? Hold on.
Yeah.
What are they?
Prestigi? He's going to laugh what at is us it? For sure.
Prestigios, fool.
That's not EOs.
Prestigios.
There's no O.
Yeah, there is. It's covered.
Oh, that coconut's an O? Yes. That's a coconut.
So it's going to be a coconut flavored fake Brazilian square Oreo.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a coconut. Prestigios.
I agree. It's a coconut. I don't know that it's an O. I think it's just Rexalos.
No, that's
just
DGO, fool.
All right.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I ain't even Brazilian.
Well, here it goes.
Hook it up, eat it.
Oh, man.
People all over are listening to the radio wondering what the hell they just got into.
It was really good.
Is it?
I don't taste coconut at all.
Well.
Mm-mm. It just tastes like cookies from the Mexican section of the grocery store.
That's you what know what like. my favorite chocolate chip cookie is who makes them, the Bimbo brand or whatever.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Man, the Chalkies, that's what they're called. They're like super packed full of chocolate chips. They're really good.
There's some hidden treasures in that 8 foot section at the
grocery
store.
Way way better than Chips Ahoy.
This one was cracked, so I have to eat it. I'm gonna go round two. Yeah.
Well, eat it quick because you got to start with the history of alcohol.
Yeah, you're starting because I'm going to start from the end.
And my for the record, my favorite store-bought cookie is Famous Amos cookies, because when I was a kid in Hawaii, I met Famous Amos and he baked me a cookie.
What?
Yep.
That's a real guy?
It is a real guy. Wally Amos.
Wally Amos?
Yeah, he was a cool guy. Like he used to sell cookies in malls in Hawaii, and then he got big and I met Famous Amos. I guess before he was famous, he was probably just Amos.
Another Twitter follower, Jared Mars, Jesus Christ, Jared, like you can like sharing our tweets and tweeting to us. Cool. And I love you for it. But man, like he has been going crazy on Twitter.
He's been blowing it up.
Yes. Like crazy. Like I feel bad because I'm not promoting the show enough. This guy's like our Twitter marketer.
Keep it up.
So yeah, like I'm just like big every like 3 minutes, like my phone's bing, you know, like, and it's Jared Mars on Twitter just
big
destroying Twitter with
trying to start a fight with podcast. Josh Mayer.
Keep slaying it.
And Victoria Barton.
Keep slaying it.
If Facebook met Twitter, there'd be a fight.
Yep.
I guess you saw a Twitter post about some like International Podcast Day, Bakersfield. Someplace saw our sticker.
I guess they're from. I would assume they're from Bakersfield.
On
so
the
I don't
pita
know.
Truck, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know who they are. So shout out to them. Cool. Yeah,
thanks for posting that.
International Podcast Day.
All right. So
podcast day today. Are we going to talk?
Two shots of whiskey and a shot of tequila and some Mexican cookies, Brazilian cookies. I'm clearing my mouth if I'm smacking. I'm sorry.
But I got some chips.
All right. So basically, I wanted to establish like, you know, the human relationship with alcohol, just basically stating that, you know, up to 7,000 years ago, we have history of.
Yeah, you
know,
you got history with alcohol right now.
I do. Clay pots.
You want to state. Yeah.
I never had a problem. Okay.
Yeah. Never this. Had a problem.
It's Dave's fault. Dave bought me my first bottle of whiskey. Yeah.
I doubt it.
So 7,000 BC, they've actually dated clay pots or clay jars that were filled with rice, honey, and fruit that fermented. So the Chinese made a sort of alcohol out of that.
7,000 years.
7,000 7,000 years ago, which there may be more. We just can't find it. But 5,500 years ago, Saudi Arabia, they found forms of wine. Egyptians actually had 17 different types of beers and 24 types of wines. So they're like competitive with like some tap houses like locally. They had 17 different beers, which is pretty impressive. You think they would just like ferment some wheat and go for it? Like,
no, because I think you're going to learn really early in the process that
they throw a date in there,
throw different stuff and make it taste better and hook it up.
And Plato was actually quoted as to say he was a wise man who invented beer. So there was some big things back then too, because water and sanitation may not have been the best. So alcohol tended to be a better alternative, you know, and it stayed. If you left water around, it could get stagnant, you know, bacteria would be in there and make you sick. But due to the alcohol content, it increased the sanitation of the drink. Although you probably peed all day and were you know, dehydrated.
And even, and I don't know the exact historical dates of when they started doing this, but even grog on ships was the fact that they would take a couple of ladles full of rum and they would throw it into the barrel full of water when they went on a trip, just so that the water wouldn't start molding and going bad. So they would throw rum in it, not necessarily as a benefit for the crew because they're going to be half sauced all the time, but because that was the way to keep the water from going bad.
And they probably had no like physiological or scientific like basis on it. They were just like, thought it was magic. Like, I wonder if they knew, like,
I'm sure they had no clue why it was happening.
No, yeah, they knew it was working.
Like, no, because I think that was well before germ theory or anything. They probably just knew from cause and effect, like alcohol doesn't go bad.
That didn't happen until like
Lewis, germ theory.
Louis Pasteur, like,
that's interesting.
Yeah, and pasteurization. That didn't happen until later. So it was just magic at that point. They threw rum in the water and just knew that it worked.
Yeah.
So really, the other important thing to talk about is like the American tradition. Like, alcohol is almost as American as apple pie. You know, like, people drink when they celebrate. They drink when you die. You drink when you meet someone. You drink at the end of a business transaction.
Right,
like, any excuse to drink before a podcast. You know,
right,
when they say, please read from sheets, you drink.
We can start our own drinking game. Every time I say, oh, I got to cut that. And then and every time.
That'd be a drinking game.
Every time Brent drinks, you have to drink.
That's going
to
start a fire right now.
Yeah.
So a couple notable, you know, historical events and some historical people that partake in alcohol. It's important to note, I think, as well. So the hold of the Mayflower was filled with barrels of beer when they first came over. So like you were just saying, because it was important because probably really couldn't transport fresh water.
Right.
George Washington at Valley Forge made sure that his soldiers and his men had half a cup of rum. And when the rum ran out, he made sure that they had half a cup of whiskey. John Adams began every day with a tankard, which I guess is like a mug full of hard cider, which isn't like apple it's not cider. As hard as whiskey, but it ain't cider. It was
so
something
it's like Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Right. Yeah, probably like Mike's Hard Lemonade. Thomas Jefferson collected fine wines. Andrew Jackson, during his inauguration, the White House party was so big that they had to move all the people onto the lawn because they were destroying the furniture. So they partied so hard that they had to kick everybody out to the grass. Young Abraham Lincoln actually had a grocery store before he was the president that we know, and he sold barrels full of whiskey.
He also slayed vampires.
That I didn't know. I thought that was just the movie, but
No, it's
that,
true.
That
it's
actually
true.
Was a good movie.
I didn't watch
it. I was surprised. I heard thought it was going to be horrible, but it actually was pretty cool.
Did he sell whiskey in it?
No.
So it's not historically accurate.
But he did
accurate.
Slay vampires.
Well, that is historically accurate.
Oh, well, I'll make note.
Yeah.
Americans routinely drank alcohol with every meal, like even in breakfast. They would wake up and drink beer, but it was 2% alcohol. So it's not, you know, it's like they brought that tradition from Europe, you know, like French people always say, like, kids that are six drink wine with dinner. And that was one of our traditions. There was actually two times a day a bell would ring, and it was known as grog time. So it didn't matter if you were a factory worker or a businessman, no matter what you did, if that bell rang, you stopped and raised a mug and drank beer. There was like two beer breaks a day.
That's fantastic.
It was called grog time, which I think is super awesome. I've never heard that in all the school and all the history. I don't know. Maybe they told us.
Hand me the scalpel stat. Ding. Hold on a second.
Grog time. So, wake the patient up. It's grog time.
They're just pouring beer into his guts. Like, just making gumbo out of his stomach.
I don't think it was in excess or anything either. They just stopped.
It was like
drank.
It was like the fish bowl in his stomach, and they had straws in it. You know, the big fish bowl, the punch bowl you can get at the
you lost
the
me.
Bar.
Yep, I'm lost too.
No, all right, maybe it's just me.
I also read that in farm families.
Wait. You get a big punch bowl at a bar?
You never seen the giant fish bowl that you can get? Like, it's like a $20 or $30 drink. Oh,
with like umbrellas, like, and
giant, with like, it's like for five people.
That only happened on Wayne's World.
No, what movie was that? Adam Sandler. Adam Sandler would like order one, and he would get the girl one too, but his didn't have any alcohol in it, and hers did.
That is a movie too, Brad. It might not.
No, happened. I've seen like people like post photos bar. Of stuff like that, yeah, from like Vegas.
Yeah, like
they'll
a fish
go to
bowl.
Vegas.
I don't know. I call it a fish bowl because okay. It's like a bowl that okay. You put fish in.
Game
well,
on.
On that note, farm families in New England had a barrel by their door full of hard cider. So it was like when you walked into the door, you grabbed a ladle and drank hard cider upon entering your home.
I like how they call it hard cider.
Yeah. So, I don't know what the alcohol content of hard cider is, but more than beer and less than whiskey. So, the bread box.
Well, because, I mean...
It could be like 20 proof, though, or you know what I mean? 40 proof would be pretty... Well, that'd get you sauced.
When I was a kid back in Michigan, I mean, there like, people made, like, homemade apple cider was, like, a big deal. Right. Like, in the... Because all the apples were out. It was one of the last crops that was going to come in before the frost hit, et cetera. And everybody would have homemade, like, not alcoholic, but just cider. And it right. was distinctly different than apple juice. It was just this delicious, and you drink it hot and whatever.
And but it has some, alcohol content?
No. It was just cider.
Okay.
But then they would add yeast. I mean, I actually know how to do it and have done it myself. My dad taught me how to do it. But you can take that apple cider and you can make it alcoholic, and it really packs a punch. I have a very good recipe.
Let's do it. Yeah. Let's drink it on
we
the podcast.
Post that on,
it's actually, I actually
post it on Facebook.
I have he taught me how to make it, and it's good enough that it got him a promotion when he was in the Korean War.
Wow.
Because he made it just fermented apple cider, and he made it, and it was illegal. You couldn't have it on the base.
I mean, that and sounds his, horrible. Fermented
no,
apple
it's so good.
Cider.
What's your
but,
confidence?
No, I'm just saying it sounds horrible.
Like, what's your confidence level we don't go blind or die if you make it and bring
100%.
It? 100%. Okay, bring it.
It's just
it's 100%. We go blind and
100%.
Die?
You don't go blind.
Okay, I was going to say, wow, this is.
It's
like,
just apple cider,
dangerous.
Sugar, raisins, and yeast. That's
raisins?
What it is. Yep.
I don't know.
Well,
about
you strain the raisins.
Oh,
it just
okay.
adds extra.
I say you leave them. Little tidbits.
I've tried it. You don't
nibbly
wanna,
bits.
Yeah, you don't want to.
You don't want to.
Right, you fine. Could. You end up. Then your chances of dying are slightly higher because you could choke on a raisin.
That's true.
So
I didn't think of a statistically yeah. speaking.
Yeah,
you do
yeah.
have a
just math. Higher,
yeah.
So basically, I'm just trying to establish that for thousands of years we have these traditions of drinking alcohol. Mm-hmm. That it's instilled in us. It's human nature. Then came the rise of agriculture. So a lot of people, there's actually like a documentary on Netflix called like How Beer Saved the World. And it has to do with how creating beer caused us to settle down and start the agricultural process, like not move on, not keep wandering around, like actually have a crop and then make beer and stay in one place.
Because everybody was alcoholics. Like, that's crazy.
That's pretty awesome. So we started parking
beer
because
so
of
bad.
Beer.
Because of beer. Yeah. Like
so bad that, oh, I guess we could grow crops. Like,
are we going to follow the bison herd? I don't know, man.
we do that.
Like, I got all this
alcohol.
Stuff growing. In a couple months, we could have some beer. Or we could go follow those bikes. Yeah, we'll go with the beer.
Well, think
yeah,
about
the
what
bison
would happen.
Will come back next year.
It probably felt magic. Like, you can either eat some like unsalted meat and some grass, right? And you're like, oh, next day, do it again. Or you drink this bubbly juice and you get dizzy and you feel happy and you're laughing.
And you're getting calories and carbs. I mean, yeah. It's also filling you up. By the way, my favorite term that I ran into when studying Prohibition, by the way, was a lot of people that talk about Prohibition referred to it as giggle water.
That's
when?
Horrible.
At what period of time was it called?
In the
giggle?
20s.
Oh, well.
Like, it was
I
like
the stupidest name for stuff back in the day.
Do your yeah, voice, see? Brad. Dick what? Tracy Giggly Water. Let's hear it.
Yeah, she. You want some of this giggly water? Yeah,
see?
Yeah.
It does.
See? Now yeah. it sounds better.
Yeah. What, hey, Dame, you want some giggly water?
Yeah, see?
Yeah,
I don't think gangsters called it that.
Yeah, maybe we can have some giggly water when we come back, right? Yeah.
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 Giggly
yeah.
water, see?
Yeah, see? Sofa King Podcast.
This is the world famous Sofa King Podcast. Stay tuned and listen to more awesome words.
Welcome back to the Sofa King Podcast, and we are talking Prohibition. So Brent has pretty much been going over why alcohol is so important to the community.
Right.
And it's, you know, thousands of years people have been drinking, and now we've come to a point where you can't drink.
Well, I'm not quite there. Basically,
Jesus.
We settled down as humans and made beer, right? But we're used to drinks that have 2 to 6% alcohol.
You know, this is only an hour show, right?
Nah, they're gonna tune into the web.
Oh, okay.
They're listening to the radio.
SofaKingPodcast.com.
Yeah. Well, I want to say one thing about agriculture. Giggle water, drink it with your mouth.
What just happened?
What? I just came up with a jingle. What? I thought we could use a giggle water jingle.
Wow. Oh, giggle water. Yeah. I thought you were saying gigawatt.
No, giggle water.
Giggle water.
Oh, okay. Drink it with your mouth. That was awesome.
I was like Back to the Future, gigawatt.
Brent, like Dave started singing and Brent, I wish we had video, man. Brent just threw his hands in the air like, what is happening?
Like I just that was do awesome. Not care.
Yeah.
So no, I'll move on to the actual prohibition here. But all I wanted to say was we're used to like 2% with breakfast, lunch, and dinner, maybe some wine. And then what happens is we start to settle down and we have agriculture and we start growing oats and corn and wheat and we have grains. And then they figure out the distillation process. And then you end up with 40% alcohol and people keep the same traditions, but whiskey enters the picture.
Right.
Yeah. Moonshine.
Right? Yeah. And we find out we can't handle it. And immigrants start coming across like, you know, we were Anglo-Protestant white normal. Then you get Irish Catholic, Jewish people coming across. People have been suppressed. You get Italians, you know, that are coming across and just different cultures and whatnot. And then into that cultural mix, all of a sudden you have distilled alcohol, which is of a higher content.
And it starts Italians to become angry
like an actual societal problem. Like the thought of prohibition wasn't just some weird restriction of freedom and some political move. It was that there was really problems. People were drunk. Like dudes would get home and spend their whole paycheck on whiskey. You know what I mean? And then they're like abuse their wives. There was no, spousal rape at that point. They didn't have laws in place necessarily against like, you know, child abuse or adultery. Right. And they were coming home.
It was
and
just a moral thing. Yeah.
Yeah. They're coming home, beat the wife, drink some whiskey and not go to work. And the thing that made you look manly drinking whiskey was almost demasculating because now you can't provide for your family because you're drunk and worthless. And so it starts to create this thing where everybody gets on board. Like it's crack or something at that point.
Yeah.
You know, and they're like, it's a problem. People are drunk. They're not working. They're just spending all their money on alcohol. And we don't handle it because it hits you like a brick because you were able to drink a bunch of beer. If you drink that much whiskey.
Yeah.
As I know, that will mess you up. You know what I mean?
As you know. As so know. On January 16th, 1920, Americans fled to the bars and saloons and liquor stores to take their last drink Legal of liquor. Drink. That was like the Black Friday of liquor stores.
Oh, man, that must have been the New Year's Eve to end all New Year's
Eve. Yeah, that was crazy, I bet you. Yeah, I bet you there were lines out the door.
And
like
the weird
a Disney
thing is,
ride.
It created a crazy mix, like such a diverse, it was the wets and the dries as the two groups that they came up with. Obviously the wet people, they just wanted to party and have fun. They didn't want you to mess with, you know, their morals or step on their boundaries. But the people that wanted it dry had a mix of like religious groups, you know, like Protestants that wanted a reason to put something on Catholic immigrants.
Yeah.
Even the KKK could stereotype black guys with a bottle of alcohol. There was just all kinds of stuff. They put
Cobra
everyone on the same,
day?
On the same
no,
team.
No.
King Cobra.
Yeah. Cobra.
That was like my first, hey, mister.
They'd have Colt 45.
King Cobras at the airport liquor store. So people kind of join hands and everyone is kind of for it. You know, there's more people obviously for it, in the beginning. And then they pass something called the Volstead Act, which basically defines, what is legal and what's not legal. Cause you can't enforce this thing unless you have a set of parameters. So the Volstead Act defines what alcohols you can or cannot have. And I think it was like 2% or something, anything under 2% you could still have. It didn't actually, prohibition did not make alcohol, the drinking of or the consumption of it illegal, just the production, transport and sales.
Yeah. And I was just going to say that it really reminds me, because to drink it is not illegal and Americans were allowed to have whatever they had stashed away in their homes. They could actually drink it legally in their homes with no repercussions. And just the manufacture, sale of transport, you know, were illegal. So it really
and
reminds
me. And you could still make your own.
You could make your own out of fermented fruit.
Yeah,
home.
You
could
make
permitted.
Your own. It really reminds me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we got into an argument about, you know, on Sandy Hook about gun laws and stuff. That reminds me of what's going on with gun laws today. It's very, very similar. Like you can make your own gun completely legal, but they're trying to stop the manufacture, you know, and sale of, you know, certain weapons. But you can make them at home. It's fine. You can have them. It's crazy. It's like the new age prohibition.
Right.
And throughout history, prohibition has shown to not work.
Right.
You know, I mean, so, and we'll get into why prohibition failed, obviously.
Do you guys know if the home brewed stuff, did that have to be under 2% as well? Like you couldn't, because I don't think you could run a still.
I don't think there's any regulation.
No, there wasn't.
Oh, there wasn't. So you could have run a still and made whiskey at home as long as you weren't selling it.
I think you can't distill it. So no.
You couldn't distill it.
Fermentation of fruits. Yeah, you couldn't distill it.
Yeah, so obviously with the beginning of prohibition and the 18th Amendment, liquor stores were going to go out of business.
So
guess who bought them? Rich people.
Sure.
They bought entire liquor stores and kept them.
And they stockpiled it.
Crazy.
Because they knew it was coming and they all did it.
The pitch seemed fine on paper, right? Because you got drunkards everywhere beating their wives and raping people and just doing whatever. So you think, oh, we'll get rid of that, you know, and they think it's
going to boost the economy because instead of people buying alcohol, it's going to go into, you know, entertainment.
Other goods.
And other goods.
You have to spend that money somewhere. And they thought it was going to improve neighborhoods. So real estate would increase. There was all these side benefits. People are going to go to the movies instead.
And little did they know that they just helped rise the gangsters.
Exactly. All that
outlaws.
You did was define organized crime and make people spend more money on the same amount of booze, and they turned
the average person into a criminal.
Right.
You know, they were going, you know, they were and going
not only
and
that,
making
it,
and
it wasn't like
booze.
It's all of a sudden cocaine's illegal. It's always been illegal. Right. So it's not. Well, it hasn't always been. But the average person doesn't do coke. But
right.
The thing is with prohibition is everybody already drank. And they're like, oh, it's just wine. It's just whatever. Like, right. It's this thing. And we had fun. And I've done it before. It's innocent. Grandma did it.
I'm not at home beating my wife. 15-year-old
kids did it. Actually, there's a crazy stat. What year was it? Because this will blow your mind. By 1830, the average American over 15 years old drank the equivalent of 88 bottles of whiskey per year.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That's insane.
So what obviously, year is that? By the year 1830. So that was, I jumped
15
back.
15 and older.
My God.
That was
how many bottles?
88 bottles of whiskey per year. It was like a bottle and a half a week or something at the age of 15. So that, you see why everyone was like, oh man, we got to do something about this. It's because there just
that's
was
like
no
every,
smooth transition.
That's the average person.
That's the average, yeah.
So like the non-average who's like, I just drink occasionally. It's just a bottle
of
month.
No, for every teetotaler who didn't drink at all, they had to be offset by some 15-year-old drinking 160 bottles.
Wow. At that point in time, Americans were actually spending more on alcohol each year than the total expenditures of the federal government.
Oh, man.
I mean, we weren't buying like jets and stuff back then. There was no F-18s or anything, but
still, the government's running a
country
on just
alcohol sales. So obviously there's a market for it. The infrastructure already exists. They know that it's not a big thing. I'm not going to like turn into a frog or something. If I drink this, no one's going to die. So when you start to all of a sudden flip a switch and say, now you can't do it tomorrow, there's still a ton of people that just want to do it. You know what I mean?
Not to mention a ton of people who are alcoholics.
Right.
Who are physically going to like have DTs and die if they don't get a drink.
They have to do it.
I mean.
So it's in steps mob.
Although I think that was accounted for though, because I know that if you had a medical license, you could actually prescribe alcohol. So I'm guessing that was probably one of the reasons why. If you were an alcoholic and you went to the doctor, they would give you a beer or a shot of whiskey and send you on your way and you'd be okay.
That's crazy. Yeah. Like the medical
marijuana prescription.
Yeah.
I think I read somewhere that $40 million
and
annually
methadone,
in medical
you know, I
prescriptions
mean, heroin.
Were written out for whiskey or something for medical
How many?
Prescriptions.
Right.
Like $40 million annually or something,
wow.
Which I like.
I mean, that's if you equate this to everything that we have today, like, I mean, look at the underground drug running and stuff, you know, like, the reason that it's underground and out of control is because of it's not legal, you know, like, and we talked about what show did we talk about this before that if you legalized heroin right now, how many people are just going to go out and do heroin? Nobody,
not the
people who are already doing heroin.
Probably. There's going to be a small percentage of people.
No, I think there's going to be people who do go out to try it.
Oh, that's a mistake.
Yeah.
You don't want to do heroin.
No.
Like cocaine's one thing, but just heroin is a whole nother story.
But to talk about how much people did, because I spent a lot of time researching the mobsters themselves and the people who ran the bootlegging and where the booze came from and all that stuff. And I was curious how many speakeasies there were, right? Because everybody went to underground places to either either like a club where you would drink at, a, at an underground bar, or you would just go to buy alcohol.
Yeah.
And collectively, they just, in this stat, they referred to it as speakeasies. But hold on. There were a total, and this, I'll give you a perspective of how many there were. Right now, actually, as of 2 years ago, we had 7,000 Starbucks in America.
Okay.
And we had just over 14,000 McDonald's in America.
Which seems like they're on every corner.
Every corner.
Yeah, every corner,
a few blocks from each other.
At the height, and keep in mind, this is modern, these are modern day numbers. Our population is massive right now compared to what it was in the 1920s.
Yeah.
What,
360 million people?
Exactly. At the height of speakeasies, there were 30,000 speakeasies in the nation.
Wow.
No, I read that in New York alone in 1925 that they estimated, because they don't know about all the speakeasies, that in New York alone there were between 30,000 to 100,000.
Wow.
That's
what I read.
That's mind-boggling.
I mean, that's a crazy range.
Well, but now, but
that's because everybody's home. Like, they had homes, basements. Like.
No, it is a crazy range, but let's put it in perspective. From the most conservative of those two numbers to the largest of those two numbers, if you're the CEO of Starbucks, you're a billionaire.
Right.
And Starbucks makes billions of dollars a year.
Yeah.
These speakeasies collectively made billions of dollars tax-free a year. And they weren't, I mean, I'm sure a percentage of them were just some dude that was selling alcohol, most likely in a rural community, maybe down south. You could have just had a still and you were selling some stuff, you know, illegally.
In the barn.
But in the cities, they were controlled by the mobsters. Every single speakeasy was either directly owned or got its whiskey and gave a significant portion of its profits to the mob boss who ran that area.
Yeah.
So these mobsters made the equivalent of Starbucks or McDonald's, this one family in Chicago or one family in New York. They made billions of dollars. Yeah. I mean,
and
ridiculous.
I did have a question. I don't know if you know, and I didn't look it up. I just thought of it right now because I've heard of them before. But a milk bar, what, that was in the same time frame, right? They were called milk bars.
A milk bar.
Yeah. So, okay, I'll look it up on a break. But the other thing was, though, too, was that they were, you know, before Prohibition, alcohol was legal, and there, everybody was a reputable alcohol salesperson selling alcohol. Besides people, there were probably some people making it at their house still or whatever. But after Prohibition, death tolls started to add up because of alcohol, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Because of unsafe liquor and people just dying from it?
I looked into that. Between when the Volstead Act passed and 1926, this one stat that I read, I don't know why they stopped at 26, but at 1926, 750 New Yorkers had died from drinking the wrong type of alcohol, basically drinking industrial methanol, not anything intended to be consumed. And they estimated that in New York State, hundreds of thousands more suffered from blindness of some degree or some degree of paralysis.
Hundreds of thousands?
Yes, from drinking bad liquor. On New Year's Day in 1927, 41 people died from drinking bad alcohol in one hospital in New York City alone.
Yeah, and the problem is, like, they started to try to redistill and reprocess industrial alcohols. It's like, paint thinner.
And they would
let's make this in the gin.
And then they would fill it with iodine, or they would seep tobacco leaves in it to make it brown so it looked like whiskey.
I watched a video where they just had, like, the industrial alcohol in the bottles, and he had a funnel, and he would just press a button, and it would just inject, like, some brown coloring. Food coloring of some sort to make it look like it. But apparently,
but it said that the coloring was primarily tobacco juice. And iodine.
Why tobacco juice?
Because it would make it brown.
Yeah, we're sitting here enjoying
tea leaves.
You can choose tea leaves. Yeah, like we're sitting here enjoying our good collection of whiskey.
Tobacco must have done something flavor wise.
I mean, obviously, you got the tobacco, which can get you high, I guess.
Yeah.
Like if you're not.
Maybe it had
smoker.
To do with the intoxication effect.
Yeah.
Like, or the addiction or something.
But just imagine squeezed tobacco leaves in. Alcohol, like rubbing alcohol.
Yes.
Ugh.
Yeah. Imagine the worst Rite Aid vodka or something, you know?
Like not even that. Like isopropyl alcohol, like that you'd put on a cut or something.
Right.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's
and people
rough.
Were selling it. And
that's
people were buying
it.
And people
that's
were drinking
gross. It. So, yeah, more people died because of Prohibition from alcohol than would have. And the problem is you don't have something on the news probably really. It doesn't spread around because it's all illegal activity.
Yeah, so as much as you drink, you would have probably been dead, Brent.
Like, I don't crazy. Drink that much. I only drink on Sunday, and I know what it is.
Denial is the first.
These all have labels on them.
Denial is the first, you know, part.
And this, I mean, we're going to, I want to spend some time talking about mobsters.
Denial's a
river. I mean, one of the reasons that mobsters were actually quite popular, even though they were criminals and they were murderers and they were thieves and racketeers and all this stuff, is because for the most part, a lot of the mobsters were known for getting their hands on real alcohol.
Right.
So, I mean, granted, the mobster still owned this schmuck on the corner that was selling ethanol, but you knew, I mean, if you went to an actual like speakeasy that you knew was owned by Al Capone or you knew was owned by Arnold Rothstein, they're not selling junk because that's where their friends go. That's where, so I mean, even, I mean, part of it, these.
Yeah, they were importing real alcohol.
Right.
From
so these complete criminals start ending up looking like local heroes because they're the ones providing everyone with booze, you know?
Well, when you create a pocket for a gangster, like you're actually making them, you know what I mean? Like they can provide you something that you can't get.
Right.
So you're going to be thankful. Especially if you need it.
You know, I mean, we think about like modern day, like drug cartel runners, and they're just, you know, the most ruthless and corrupt, cutthroat, like murderers, et cetera. And I mean, a lot of these mobsters were, but a lot of them also sort of relied on this sort of mafioso code. So a lot of them wouldn't kill civilians. They wouldn't do all the, you know, a lot of
these
things.
You don't kill women and children.
Right. And they tended to, and it's like, they tended to mostly look out for their own ethnicity. So like Rothstein was Jewish and he ran New York. And all of the Jewish neighborhoods, you know, he looked out for them. Like those were his people. He hooked them up. So like they had this incredible loyalty in their own neighborhoods. And it's one of the reasons why they come off more like Robin Hoods and almost heroes, even to this day, instead of just like scumbag federal criminals. You know, it's like there's no other period in history where you have the most ruthless, murderous criminals in the nation, and they're all like held up as idols. To this day, we respect them and kind of idolize them and want to see movies about them and think they're cool. And I mean, there's just something about this mobster mentality. And I think that's one big reason. I'm not, you know, drinking a glass of stagger blind and getting paralyzed. I'm drinking whiskey, you know.
Well, and they were providing a service too. There was a need for it. There was something you wanted and they had it. They were like the cool senior that just showed up to the party. With Ray. You know what I mean?
So I think it's interesting, you know, that it kind of helped introduce the rise of gangsters within the, you know, within the alcohol community. But what did the, you know, the real breweries do to stay in afloat? You know what I mean? Anheuser-Busch and Coors. They actually, Anheuser-Busch turned their brewery, they retrofitted it to make ice cream.
Nice.
And then Coors, they doubled down on the production of pottery and ceramics.
That's weird.
They already did that?
Yeah. So like when everything switched over, like they had to create a way to stay in business.
Right.
So they started selling ice cream, pottery, and ceramics.
That's
so
weird. The pottery and ceramics. For 13 years, they started making pottery.
I know. You would think that they would go underground too and just like have some sort of, I guess they would be watched but I don't know. I mean, apparently they made it because they're still around
I can't. I can't imagine that the brewmasters for those places weren't immediately hired by the mob, though.
Oh, for sure.
I'm sure they worked directly with them and made some deathly alcohol.
Separate yourself from the morons. Listen to more on SofaKingPodcast.com. Stay tuned through the break.
Let Dave smell it on air.
Take him. Take him.
Don't smell it.
No, it's on air. We're on air.
We're on air? Okay.
Eek.
I will commit. I commit to eating that after looking at you guys smelling it.
We're smelling a bag of Temperado, which we just opened from our gift pack of snacks from Brazil. They look like
they look really good.
They're like herb crusted little crackers.
Before I opened them, I said, "Man, these look like they'd be really good on a snack."
Oh, like I literally had the whole reaction from
I did too.
That
That's
thing.
Why they were telling me to turn it on.
All right,
turn
Rex.
On the recording.
I'm gonna.
Yeah, Rex.
Do you want me to smell it and eat it, or you just
no,
want
just,
to eat it?
Just eat
just
it.
Just eat it, man. Right, I wouldn't smell it.
Yeah, because you won't eat it.
They're delicious.
Are they?
Smell it. Smoked white cheddar.
No, now take a deep smell.
I like to say he has a note on here that says. What all other chips dream to be, I'm with you, Rex.
I disagree.
You didn't eat it yet, man.
No.
No, man.
No.
It smells like a campfire.
No,
man.
That was bad.
What is wrong with you?
Try one. You have to eat one.
No, you're drunk. No.
I mean, I'm going to
I almost threw up on the floor. Like, I almost fell over my chair.
I'm going to have to say Dave gagged. The smoke of this does linger a bit long. Like the aftertaste is very lingering.
That's not smoke. That's famunga.
The
famunga?
Yeah.
There's a hint of toxoplasmosis. I'm feeling aggressive.
We're going to jiu-jitsu right here on the table.
I'm sad you're not going to try this, Brad.
Ah, man, I can't, dude. Oh. Like, I don't even want that bag near me.
Roughness.
Brent is just chowing down on them.
I think they're good. Like,
God.
They're not bad.
Okay. Well, we still thank you, even though
two of us gagged. We really do appreciate
big
it.
Big shout out for sending us that package. That's really cool.
And there's still a box full of crazy.
Yeah, we'll get to more in future episodes.
Yeah. He's going to be famous for quite a while.
No, we like to be cultured.
Yeah. Okay, so
they taste like camping, just for the record.
They don't.
Like a really bad camping trip.
like you're camping in a tent with a dead body.
You guys haven't tried it, so you don't know. Come here, kiss me, Brad.
No.
Okay, so we're talking about Prohibition. And we ended off, we were talking a little bit about the mob culture and what came of it. And one of the people that I wanted to look up because of a story that I had read years ago in a mixology like bartending book. It made me very sad because it turned out the story wasn't true once I looked into it. Uh-oh. But I looked into, there's a famous character from that era named Bill McCoy. And the story that I had read was that the Cutty Sark, and you can still buy Cutty Sark whiskey, was a ship that was used to smuggle whiskey, and that Bill McCoy was the captain of the ship. And that's why everyone says this is the real McCoy was because of Bill McCoy. Huh. Unfortunately, that phrase existed before Bill McCoy and he had nothing to do with the Cutty Sark.
To the opposite so of like when you say, bootleg.
So like when you're like, yeah, this is the Bill McCoy. That's what you're meaning. You mean Bill McCoy?
Yes.
All yeah, right. But when you say bootleg, it means that it's fake. And then you say that it's the real McCoy, it's real.
And it's real.
I don't know,
because the reason for the bootlegging came around is because they used to hide flasks in their boots.
In their boots.
That's where bootlegging came from.
Term. But Bill McCoy was a smuggler, and before Prohibition, he built ships for rich people, like little yachts and fast pleasure crafts and so on and so forth.
A pleasure craft.
A yacht, something that a dandy boy sails around.
A dandy boy. This episode's great.
So once again, we make t-shirts based off of funny things said on episodes. If you like pleasure craft or dandy boy,
drink it with your mouth.
Speaking of, if you like to test the episode, the shirt is on sale on Facebook. There's 24 available. Some have sold. And
the last day is
Wednesday.
Okay.
So tomorrow, and there will be no more. So if you didn't get one.
If you want the Tesla laser pigeon shirt, go to our Facebook, track it down, and buy it because time is of the essence.
Yes,
I got one.
So Bill McCoy, the thing that he did that was kind of cool, he's still a real person. He owned two ships, the Arethusa and the Tomoka. And what he would do is he would sail to either Canada or to Ireland or to the Bahamas. If he was down in the Bahamas, he would get rum. If he was in the other two places, he would get whiskey. And he would bring them and he would park in international waters and ships would sail out to his boats and buy whiskey.
That's cool.
And sail away. And the Coast Guard couldn't stop him. He wasn't doing anything illegal. He's selling whiskey in international waters.
Yeah.
So the Coast Guard would try to pick off people coming back to shore, but they could never touch Bill McCoy. The mobsters didn't like him because he was completely bypassing their business. And people.
He had the rich crowd too, because they got boats.
Like rich people regular people would sail out there. I mean, the mob would still buy stuff from him, but he would be able to undercut their region. But Bill McCoy was kind of this famous figure for doing that. And the average was that from one ship haul, he personally would make $300,000 in profit, which is somewhere along the lines of $5 million.
Yeah. Millions.
So one run on his ship and he would pocket $5
million. And that's back then.
Like 300,000 back then. So oh, I'm five saying million. $5 million right now.
You know, what's another notable thing is the increase in like the economic, upturn of like Canada, Mexico, and European alcoholic distributors, because all of a sudden there became this giant market. There was a void in the market. Mm-hmm. And I read that they would ship stuff to Canada legally. And they'd be like, well, I don't know, land it over there in Canada.
Right.
And then they would change the paperwork and drive it across the border and smuggle it in.
Do you got a chip clip? Because I could still smell those croutons.
That's my breath.
So the other thing, as I started researching these mobsters, and I knew a little bit about them just out of personal interest, but anyone who watches, have you two watched any Boardwalk Empire on HBO?
No,
one episode. I think it was season one, episode two, The Dandy Boy.
It's
I heard that there were a lot of gangsters that were related to, that were real in Prohibition.
Well, it's surprisingly accurate.
Yeah.
Like they really sort of model it on the truth, and they kind of focus on three of the main mob figures.
Gun Kelly.
No. Enoch Nucky Thompson is the main character in the show, but in the real world, there was a guy named Enoch and they called him Nucky, and his last name was Johnson. His father was the sheriff. He ended up becoming a very political figure. Over the years, he was the county treasurer, the county collector, the bank director, the president of the building and loan authority. He was just like politician.
And he's a mobster.
And he was kind of, he almost wasn't a mobster. He kind of just like did things for other mobsters and
just a corrupt politician.
Just Atlantic City. Like Atlantic City was a tourist destination for the entire East Coast. And Atlantic City basically agreed, we don't care about Prohibition. Like the only income we have is tourist dollars, and they want to come here for women, gambling, and alcohol.
So it's kind of like Vegas.
It's very much like Vegas, and all cops turned. I mean, they were obviously being bribed as well, but they just turned a blind eye because this is Atlantic City, and he ran Atlantic City. He was very, very powerful, and a lot of his friends tried to convince him that he should run for Senate. And he said, and it was an actual quote of his, was, "I'm never going to run for Senate because a real boss isn't elected." So he was like, he just kind of shuffled things around.
Yeah.
He made on alcohol sold in Atlantic City alone, and he didn't import it. He didn't bootleg it. He didn't brew it. He just let people, he just kept it legal for everyone to sell it. And he got a cut of all alcohol sales. I think most of it was actually sold by Rothstein in New York, but he made $500,000 a year just on alcohol sales.
Nice.
But he also ran the brothels. He ran the casinos.
He's making millions.
He got a cut of everything.
Yeah.
And again, talking about what I mentioned earlier, he was super, super friendly to locals. Like if a local from Atlantic City turned up and like their husband died in an accident and they had no money, he would just like pull $20,000 out of his pocket and just give it to a widow and say, "And by the way, show up at the Ritz next Friday. You got a job." And he would like pay for people. I mean, he would give money lavishly because he had so much money.
That's cool though. Mm-hmm. Like that's pretty awesome. Like how could you be mad at that guy?
Right. And I don't know if
even
it was
though he killed your husband,
right? I don't know if it was a strategy just to keep Atlantic City on his side, or but all indications from what I've read about him was he was just this super generous guy that just he was like famous for dressing well. He always had a red carnation in his jacket. He drove around in like a powder blue Dandy Boy car,
Plymouth.
Like every car was black and his was blue. But I mean, so Nucky Thompson, and then he held a famous meeting that was from a group that everyone called the Combined or the Big Seven in Atlantic City, which really determined who was doing what with organized crime and alcohol for Prohibition. And he hosted it. They all
so he was basically
there.
Organizing the whole
he
thing.
Was like organizing organized crime, basically.
Wow. That's why they call it organized crime, right, because
exactly.
of him.
Right. But so at the meeting was, and just these names are great. There was a guy named Abner Longy Zwillman. who owned New Jersey, Mo Dalitz of Cleveland, Waxy Gordon, who ran Philadelphia, Danny Walsh, who was from Providence, Rhode Island, and Danny Walsh had direct connections to Joseph Kennedy. Danny Walsh and Kennedy supposedly ran alcohol together. Arnold Rothstein, who owned New York, and he was a Jewish mobster.
I like how they own New York.
He owned New York. Own
Long Island.
He did.
You own.
And like Lucky Luciano and Al Capone started working for Rothstein, but then Rothstein sent Capone to Chicago to expand his empire to Chicago, and then
Capone
took. And then Capone took over, but still kind of worked with Rothstein.
I read Capone made $60 million annually.
Yeah, but they estimate between 60 and 100.
And that's back then.
That's back then dollars. That's not crazy. Nowadays dollars.
Yeah.
The thing I read was that by modern day standards, he probably made $1.3 billion a year selling alcohol.
And we're talking about Nucky, and it's $500,000. Yeah. Like.
But that was so $500,000 a month. On month. Alcohol, he didn't even sell.
Oh, 500,000 a month. I thought you said a year.
Oh, was it a year? You're right. It was a year. But that was on alcohol. He didn't even sell.
He didn't do anything.
Like he wasn't doing anything. True. I mean, and Rothstein, who ran New York, he was really the inventor of the way organized crime works, of looking at it as they're like treating it like a corporation. He realized early on. As soon as Prohibition started, organize he was this. Like, I'm going to organize this and I'm going to make so much money. And he did. He made ridiculous amounts of money.
Well, he owned New York, so he had to make more than everybody. Capone.
Yeah.
And 30,000.
Capone was kind of his boy, you know, to a certain degree. But Chicago did get bigger as things got on because trade from Canada would come through Chicago and go down. But Arnold Rothstein rigged the 1919 World Series. And they called it the Black Sox scandal. And he paid seven members of the White Sox to throw the World Series so the Cincinnati Reds would win. And then meanwhile, he ran all the booking. So he bet heavily for these specific numbers and just, you know, cleaned up. 2 years later, the Traverse Stake horse race in 1921, he fixed that race. And they think he made more money in that than he did in the World Series. But he was a massive influence. But he was also a massive gambler. And that's ultimately what got him killed. He played at a high stakes game, lost $4.3 million
back then
at a game, and insisted that the game was rigged. It's not that he didn't have the money, but he refused to pay because he said the game was rigged.
So he likes rigging games.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Pay,
so ironically,
he don't want to.
Yeah. And then someone shot him because of that. Right.
Douche
and
then
of course, there's
that was Rothstein.
That was Rothstein.
Yeah, he deserved it.
And then the king of them all, of course, was Al Capone, and he ran Chicago. And I really thought he like strong armed Chicago and took it over. But from everything I read, he really kind of
didn't.
He worked for Torrio in the Torrio family, but then Torrio got almost assassinated and was all shot up, and he quit and moved back to New York and gave it to Capone. And then the Valentine's Day Massacre was basically
a successor.
He was just getting rid of one opposition in the Valentine's Day Massacre, where he had this family of brothers that were his prime competition, and he had cops show up on Valentine's Day, which was a regular
thing. They had a movie about that.
Yeah. But cops would show up, shake you down, put you up against the wall, and say, "Hey, we're going to arrest you." And you'd be like, "Why don't you take seven barrels of that whiskey and all the money in my pocket?" And then the cops would do it and leave. Yeah. So the cops showed up. The mobsters didn't do anything. They just lined them up against the wall, and then they fired 160 machine gun rounds.
And that's with Lucky Luciano and those guys, huh?
I think Lucky Luciano was one of the shooters because he was an ally of Capone.
And the cops shot those guys?
People dressed like cops.
The mobsters
dressed like cops.
Shaking other mobsters down and then killed them.
And then the whole famous thing of Elliot Ness, and he worked for the Department of Justice, or the Justice Department, it was technically named at the time. He was a Fed, and no one could bring down Capone because every single person was on his payroll. He had so much money. Everyone was paid off. And then
I heard from cops to judges,
everybody,
to congressmen,
FBI. All the way. And that's how all of them worked. That's how Rothstein worked. Yeah. That's how Nucky Johnson worked. That's
everybody
how all
had a
of them
price.
Worked.
Yeah.
And you got to think that doesn't fade away. Like if enough money influences someone like a congressman from a gangster that's illegal, then what's to say that a special interest or lobbyist isn't easily doing that right now?
Well,
no, obviously,
they are
because it's not even
the other thing too, though. Like to mention, this was the Depression, so people were struggling.
Right,
you know what I mean. And if you're getting paid so much money to look the other way, You're doing nothing but benefiting. You know?
Yeah, I read the average factory worker, like a good job average factory worker, made $5 a day.
Yeah.
So those numbers you're talking about
are ridiculous.
Are insane.
Ridiculous. And like I said,
when like the middle class guy makes $5 a day, that is big money. Yeah. That's crazy money.
Yeah. And that's why people like Nucky Johnson were. I mean, I read one instance, and again, it was a woman.
Nucky Johnson.
His real name is Johnson. In the show, it's Thompson.
Oh, okay. I got you.
But there was a woman.
They changed it. Like
when I changed mine, it's going to be Nucky Thompson. Okay, I like it better. Okay. Yeah.
They made it like way different. So you wouldn't confuse.
That's
it.
Right. But like he bought a widow a brand new house and gave her all the money in this pocket, which happened to be $20,000. And this is an era where because he probably already owned the house in the first place. She was probably buying it from him. Yeah. And he basically just said, don't worry about it. You're going through a rough time. Here's what's in my pocket.
Yeah. Like
$20,000.
I bet you there were some favors involved after that one.
But no, he was famous for doing it all the time. You know, and then guess what? Wow. That woman is going to work in his casino. And if she sees another mobster or thinks there's a Fed poking around,
she's his buddy.
She's instantly going to tell him anything that might, you know.
Yeah, she's on
him.
His side forever.
Absolutely, for the rest of her life.
Well, 500 grand a year, giving 20 grand away is still a really big deal. I mean, he must have had other income or something.
Oh, no. He had income from everything.
He was the brothels, everything. Oh, okay. 500,000 was
all the
just
casinos.
Alcohol. Just
that
alcohol.
Just alcohol.
Just making it where he kept everybody out of Atlantic City.
Right.
And it was okay in Atlantic City.
And he was he was regularly paid by all the mobsters to mediate mob conflicts. So if somebody from Chicago and somebody from New York were going to kill each other, they would go to Atlantic City and sit down with.
How do you get to be the mob's mediator? That's crazy. Like, you are instantly the dopest person. Right. Like, you're just like, oh, yeah, I'm going to sit down with this guy and this guy. And
but the other thing with the numbers of the money that he made, that stat that I read was how much money he made from Atlantic City liquor sales. But he also had the infrastructure to get the alcohol. So he was selling a lot of alcohol to New York.
Yeah.
And that wasn't even part of that $500,000. So he was just this massive,
He was making millions for sure. Easy.
So one of the reasons I'm interested in this is because when you start thinking about the legalization of pot, it's going to be that level of a change. I mean, it's going to be billions of dollars. I mean, there's going to be an Al Capone figure, even though he's not going to be illegal, he's going to be legal, but there's going to be some larger than life national figures who own, you know, major pot distributors everywhere. And it's going to get to be really,
it's going
to
be Walmart. That's my prediction.
That's crazy.
All the Walmarts they close for Jade Home, for plumbing, they're going to reopen giant grow houses.
I think they're already reopened. Like they shut down. They're back open.
I don't know.
You don't know?
So go have a drink.
You've just heard a radio edition of the Sofa King Podcast. To hear an uncut version of this episode or listen to a separate web-only podcast every Tuesday, visit SofaKingPodcast.com or find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite podcast app. You can reach the Sofa Kings at Sofa King Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.